Welcome to the Continued Silence with me, Emma Jane Taylor, on UK Health Radio. The Continued Silence is focused on the very uncomfortable conversations of child sexual abuse and the importance of talking openly about this subject. We want to try and normalise this difficult conversation. Child sexual abuse is real. It affects millions of people, young and old, across the world. And the work we are doing is very much engaging more lateral thought processes on this terrible crime. Supporting survivors, protecting children, and helping those not wanting to listen to listen. Joining me each show is my resident panel, therapist Denny Corby, activist Chris Tuck. Each week, we are joined by guests from around the world to share more insights on this crippling conversation that helps us to share more important messages. For this show, we are joined by Nicole Howell. Nicole is a parent. She's a single parent helping her children on their healing journey. So we'll find out more from Nicole, but first of all, I want to turn to my panel and I'll start with Denny. Great to see you there, Denny. Thank you. Today's show, Parental Support. We haven't done this show before, but I think it's a really important show and I know there's going to be a lot coming out of this, but a big one again.
Yeah, hi, nice to see everyone again. Yeah, as always, our topics are so vast and wide. It's often difficult, isn't it, to keep on track. But parenting is quite a passion of mine. I work, as you know, with many families around Devon. And it's interesting, isn't it? You become a parent. I think it's the hardest job in the world. So that's my first acknowledgement that I always give in my line of work with families and as a therapist. It absolutely is the hardest job in the world. And becoming a parent doesn't mean that our own histories and our own feelings and our own emotions all of a sudden disappear. So there's a dual process that has to go on as we hold our children and guide our children. We're also having to be aware of our own emotions within that. We're all human. And I know, EJ, I say this every single time. We're all human. We're individuals and we all have very differing needs. And each child will respond differently to the same parenting style, boundaries, and the approach that we use. There is no one size that fits all within therapy or within the world of parenting. And if you add trauma onto this, it becomes even more complex. And that applies to both the parent and the child. And in my experience and in my growing knowledge, as I continue to do more training and learn more, every day is a school day in my eyes. We've got to move away from the very old school punitive approaches that we use within our systems. That's from school through to the police, through to the justice system. We've got to bring it back more into a relational approach. And by that, I mean that we have a curiosity without judgment. And that's how we help children to become more aware of their inner life and their lens and how they see the world. And then they're able to reflect on the reasons for their behaviour. And it also asks us to consider in positions of power the meaning behind the behaviour rather than just dealing with the behaviour that's in front of us. So I'm looking forward to the exploration today and hearing other people's points of views. But my main message is there's no right or wrong. Parenting really is complex and incredibly difficult role.
Actually, I see a lot, you know, a lot of judgment towards parents, but actually, how can you make judgment given what you said? You know, no one size fits all. You know, we have to agree to disagree, right? Because as parents, I think it's important that parents take on constructive conversations and we can expand that, but also understand that, like you say, Denny, journeys are very different and situations are very different, which we're going to hear about today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the sooner we kind of almost let go of this indoctrination, I think, of expectation that children are capable of adult-like behaviour and adult-like processing and adult regulation, the easier it will be to, and I say tolerate their mistakes, that's clumsy, but I work, as you know, within the institution of education, and that is still very much what runs through schools. There's a very, very high expectation that we should all operate within a neurotypical world, and that eradicates any neurodivergency going on and trauma. We have to be more trauma informed.
Thank you, Denny. Great to have you with me. Chris, nice to see you there. Thank you, as usual, for being here. And again, on a difficult conversation, and one we haven't spoken about before, but obviously you're a parent as well. And I know you talk openly about that. You know, parental support, this conversation, where we are in the world, it's I don't think 50 minutes is ever going to do us justice with this conversation. But again, an important one to have.
Absolutely. No one is born to be a parent. We all have to learn our way into being the best parent that we can be. And when our own lived experiences may have been negative, and we may not know the best way to be a parent because of those negative impacts, it can be a trial to try and be the best parent. And especially when you are an adult and you've gone through like adverse childhood experiences, if you don't know that you've been impacted, you may be turning up in the world presenting in a certain way that has an impact on your children because you don't know no different until you do. And then when we do, we can do better by ourselves and be better for our children. That all sounded a bit cryptic, but it wasn't meant to be. It's just, as I said, no one's born to be a parent. We are all finding our way. We learn from our own parents. If we've got good parents, kind, loving, caring, then we're more likely to be the best parent we can be. But if we don't have those experiences, then we may not be parenting in the most beneficial way for our own children, even if we want that. And so it's really important for us to acknowledge that if you have gone through negative lived experiences and you feel that that is impacting you as a parent, that you actually go and get some help and support and maybe attend some parenting classes.
Yeah, and none of it's easy, and I think that's the most important thing is being a parent isn't easy, and we must not cast judgment onto parents who are going through the difficult times because of everything that you've just said and Denny said. And I think today's conversation is going to open up a really, really big conversation, because obviously with the content that we know is going to open out. So let's move on anyway to Nicole Howell. Thank you, Nicole, for joining us today. Nicole, this is a difficult conversation because you are a parent of children who were trafficked. And I know that you've got some really important messages to share with our audience today. And I thank you for that. But I just want to sort of first of all, obviously, just hear from you, have an introduction to you, but also, first of all, in our first sort of conversation, how did you find out that your children were being trafficked?
Thank you so much for having me. And actually, yes, I did have a situation where my ex was arrested first for online and internet images that he had on his all of his devices. And it wasn't for several years then that before my first my son disclosed. And then my daughter disclosed a year later. And essentially, it just my son was not living with me at the time that he disclosed to me. And it was a phone conversation, honestly. We weren't even in the same state. He called and just said, "Hey, I've been having these weird fever type dreams, and I don't even know what they are. And essentially, like bad things are happening in them, but I don't know who it is." And was very, very much trying to not make any assumptions. And then as time went on and more was revealed in terms of, memories coming forward and that sort of thing, he spoke to me a little bit more about it. I know that a lot of children will not tell you everything for a lot of reasons. And that's the case with my kids as well. And it was probably a year later that my daughter came and said something. And I didn't at the time allow them to really talk to each other too much about it at first. I wanted to make sure that they weren't influencing each other's journey and that they were trying to, and that they were able to experience essentially their own things as they needed to. So, yeah, that's pretty much where it came from for me. And then just essentially as I took my journey as a parent, I looked for resources to help with parents. And unfortunately, there's just not a lot of resources to help parents going through what they're going through. And equally important to help their children go through their journey. How can I support my kids? How can I make sure that they're advocated for properly, that they know how to advocate for themselves, that they are believed, or, you know, and that they're given the time and space that they need to heal. And I think those are all important things. And so I wasn't quite able to find that information. So I started a podcast recently called Through the Undertow. And it's THRU, Through the Undertow, that helps to deal with some of those, not only the topic of child sexual abuse as well, you know, child sexual abuse, but also trafficking and just the parts of healing and, you know, different types of therapy and that kinds of thing.
I can't help but think, Nicole, or feel that any parent finding out that their children have been trafficked must come with a lot of guilt. And I just would like to sort of hear how you manage that. And maybe Denny would like to take on this part of the conversation. But that, I'm sure, must be quite overwhelming. Of course, you've got your children disclosing. And I know that one of the things you talk about is believing the children straight away, which we'll move on to later. But supporting your child, believing your child, and then how you as a parent manage that, and is there guilt attached, or is it just a different emotion at that point as a parent? You know, what were you going through at that moment when you started, all this started to come out?
You know, it's funny that you say that. In the very first episode that I have of my podcast, I actually talk about guilt, but I talk about how I don't feel guilt at all. I don't feel any guilt at all. And I was talking to a friend of mine who said that, you know, they listened to the first episode and they were like, you felt incredibly guilty at first. So I think sometimes our own perceptions of how we feel can be a little bit skewed with everything that we have going on. We tend to, as parents, when our children are going through a trauma, put our children first so much that we might not even be honest with ourselves about what we're feeling and how we're feeling. And I can say that I did feel guilty. I myself in particular felt guilty. I work in the film industry, and that adds an element to it. And so I used to travel for extended periods of time and left my children with you know, my husband at the time, who obviously I trusted and thought was a wonderful man. And that was definitely not the case. And so it's hard to not feel guilt at essentially doing the things that you need to do to live your life. And then, and the problem with that is that if you took it and you said, okay, but if this person were who I thought they were, this would be the way that our lives would go, and then everything would be fine. And there's just this, I feel like there's very much this societal push of like, of lack of understanding of how could you not know? Okay, well, you guys didn't know either. Like, I don't understand why it's surprising. And I actually remember the first time that I started to look for information when I found everything out, the only thing that I could find was support groups for people who knew and how they could continue their relationship with that person, accusations of, well, there's no way that the person didn't know. I mean, it was just this awful, awful message of that parent had to have known. And even now, when I talk about it occasionally, there are absolutely still people now who are like, how could you not know? How could you not know? And I say a lot that I traveled for work, but the reality is there were times I know that I was home and I wasn't traveling for work and things still happen. I know that. And one thing that I like to say that I think is very valid and that we as a society forget is that predators groom their character witnesses just as much as they're grooming their victims. They are intentionally, with purpose, charming as many people as they possibly can. They are, you know, doing their best to lay out and making sure that whomever their victims are not believed. And I think that that's incredibly important for people to recognize that if you don't come from that mindset of evil. How can you possibly, you know, that's not where your brain goes. That's not where your mind goes when things happen. And when someone's able to reason something away or say something to you, you would buy that explanation, you know? Yeah. And so I think that that's incredibly important to remember.
Yeah, Nicole, you say some really valid points there. And as I was listening to it, I was thinking yet again that maybe that initial planting of that seed in anyone is that external judgment that we get, you know, that society's view that I think you said it very clearly. How could you not know? You must have known. And it's that external judgment that can send us into a place of guilt. And that severs families when child sexual abuse is disclosed and it comes out. That's another layer of families just being severed and the pain that that causes for different people. And of course, guilt and shame are often quite hard to kind of pull apart. And guilt is almost the feeling we have about a behavior we have done that is wrong, whereas shame is something that is, we are wrong. I'm fundamentally wrong. So it is quite important to be able to really identify the difference between guilt and shame. And the other point that I think I was going to jump in, and you did it beautifully, is let's not forget that grooming, whichever you want term you want to call, performing, we know that that's done in a variety of ways, and it's generally not always just with the victim, it's the surrounding people. So guilt's a big one, and I found it really interesting that initially you kind of, your statement was, no, I don't feel guilty. And hey, our brain protects us, doesn't it? And when we are ferociously fighting for our children, thank goodness our brain does protect us and dissociates from our own sense sometimes. Although that work needs to be done later on once things have settled down.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I just wanted to say, Nicole, as well, in our earlier conversation, you were saying that you knew something deep down was not quite right, and you thought it was not quite right elsewhere. And when you brought that to the attention of your ex, he almost gaslighted you into sort of like saying and thinking, no, everything's okay, you don't need to worry. So you're absolutely right when they groom everybody around them to enable them to enact their crimes. It is when you step back and actually look at what they've done and how they do it, it's quite masterful, the manipulation in how they actually go around and do what they want to do and how they manipulate everybody around them to enact that.
Absolutely. No, I definitely agree with that. And thank you, Chris, for pointing that out. I did say earlier, my, you know, when people say, how did you not know? One of the things for me was, I did have some inclination that perhaps something was going on, and I brought it up to, you know, to my partner, which I think is probably a normal thing. When your child is exhibiting behavior that's concerning to you, you bring that up to your partner. And so that would be what I would do, you know, oh my gosh, do you think something's going on at daycare? Do you think something's going on at school? Do you think something's going on, blah, 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 wherever. And he was very, very good at not dismissing me. But also not taking it too far forward either. And basically just making me feel secure, you know, and oh, we'll keep an eye on it, whatever, I'll keep an eye on it. And of course, you know, with him, and then it just, yeah, it was very difficult situation. And I do feel like as any person who's only seeing part of the picture, you develop a certain opinion, and maybe that's even that your children are problematic. I can tell you that I took my son to several different mental health professionals and got everything.
Was your husband with you when you did that?
Yes, yes.
And I mean, it's coercive behavior in every sense, isn't it? In every sense of what you're saying here. And I think, you know, I think any parent who has gone through any of these situations, and in fact, all parents should listen to this, because even if your child hasn't been through trafficking or sexual abuse, I think it's really important to listen, because this is protection as well. This is protection to help us all. Chris has got her hand up. Let's go to Chris before we take a short break.
Yeah, I was just going to jump on about what Nicole's just said as well. One of my siblings was made out to be the naughty child, was taken to the GP, difficult child, behaviour, We need to do this. Can you put support in place? So that, as I said, master manipulator. And then when that child's name was literally blackened in my family, then the abuse took over and was upped. So, yes.
Wow. Very controlling, very controlling. Well, look, thank you, everyone. We're going to take a short break now. Don't go anywhere. We will be back after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show today with me, Emma Jane Taylor, and my panel, resident therapist Denny Corby and activist Chris Tuck. We are speaking to Nicole Howe, and we're talking about parental support and about the difficulties around the conversation as a parent of children who've been sexually abused and in this incidents trafficked. So a really difficult conversation, very traumatic to hear the story. And also understand what you as a parent went through. And also, not only were your children groomed and manipulated, so were you and many others around you, actually, because of what your ex had been doing. So, Nicole, you know, one of the things you talk about is that you believed your children. Was that something that was instant for you as a parent, or did you have to go through a series of questioning yourself to get to that believing instantly?
I would say that I believed them instantly, but in the sense of I believed that what I think that something that's important to recognizes that your children can be not lying. This is probably, this one's a hard one. I believed them, but for me, it was a little bit different because my ex had already been arrested for the internet stuff. So that was just a little bit different. I would also say though, that since then I've had some issues, you know, some, repeated issues with my daughter with various people and various things happening. And the thing that I think is important as a parent to recognize is that your children can be speaking their truth without necessarily speaking the truth. And I think that's something that you have to be careful of because it can get you into trouble. But at the same time, it's important because kids have very different filters than adults do. What they process, what they see, what they feel, what they think based on whatever's happening to them can be very different than what an adult would see, speak, hear, that kind of thing. Their filters are just different. And I don't think that when it comes to any form of sexual matter that a child would know how to lie and be manipulative in that way. And so I think for anybody to say that they're lying is not really understanding where a child's coming from. And I think that, you know, asking questions isn't a bad thing. There's nothing wrong with asking, you know, following up with questions and trying to get more to the meat of the matter and figure out what's happening. But I think that, making it out that your child is lying or that they're not to be believed at all is just not, it's not a proper way to handle things ever. I don't think that's my personal opinion. So I believed my children the moment that they said something.
Yeah, Nicole, I'd like to just jump in there. There was just something that you said there about, you know, their truth may not necessarily be the truth. And I think, and please, please come back at me if I've taken this the wrong way and that you want to give more clarity. But what we know, don't we, about children who are sexually abused, and the interesting thing about your children was they didn't need a direct threat from their father, the perpetrator, because the threat was there. He was at the medical appointments. It was, you know, the confusion and the sense of feeling unsafe in every area of their life. I have clients who sometimes say to me, my guilt is how come I didn't say anything because I wasn't told to keep it quiet. You don't need to be. You absolutely don't need to hear those words to know that you're unsafe, and what's happening is disclosure means that you may well be even more unsafe. But the part of the children's truth is, we know, don't we, that child sexual abuse severs development. It absolutely, a neurological pathway is created around how you attach to other people, how you get a sense of connection. And we know that the behaviors that we may see in our children, if we look at it in a very black and white world, would be that we focus on the worry that our children are sexually promiscuous and what is wrong with them, why do they keep going for this and that. And what we have to understand is that's a direct result of what they have learnt and been put through as a result of their abuse. So I hear far too many times when I'm putting in a report for a MISPA, oh, well, they're probably off doing what they normally do. We found them in such and such's house. And the focus is on the abused behaviour rather than what has gone on behind that behaviour. And I think I may have been saying that clumsily and not making my point clear, but I think I was just trying to bring live an example of how some people might see one side of a truth with a young person, and yet we know that a young person who has been sexually abused will, of course, at times, not understand healthy attachments.
Absolutely, definitely. I think that's absolutely correct. And I think that most people will say that it really doesn't matter what happened to them as they were growing up. They assumed that that was the normal for a lot of them. So they don't know to ask questions. They don't know to tell people what's going on, because oftentimes they're either told or they just make the assumption that this is the way that it works. This is the normal thing that happens. And what I can say in my instance is that, unfortunately, my ex very much used my job against me and would tell my children that I knew what was going on. And see, and every time I would go away, would use that to cement, see, she knows what's going on and she doesn't care and she's leaving anyways. And I remember one particular time when my daughter was pretty young, and she looked at me and she was very upset that I was going out of town. And she was like, you know, she just made a comment about how your job is to take care of me. And I thought, oh, that's so adorable. Like, my daughter is going to miss me when I'm gone. And, you know, aw, you know. And when I found out everything that was going on, it just took on a very different bent. And it was really heartbreaking at that moment to know what she was really trying to say in her own way and just didn't have the words for her.
Do you mind if I jump in here, EJ, just for a moment? I just want to take it back to, like, the parental response. And I agree with Nicole and what she says, and I applaud you for actually believing your children. I would like to think that most parents would, but we know for a fact that it doesn't work like that. We either believe our children and we give them support and we help them get through it, or some parents are in complete denial, or they deflect and they believe the perpetrator, and or they will disown their children. So there's lots of different ways that parents will react to a disclosure. And I think the only way to deal with disclosures is to believe the children, even if there is a minute chance that the truth is not being told. That child still needs help. And we said that on this show multiple times before. A child needs to, in my experience, to have seen or taken part in abuse in order to speak about it verbally or non-verbally. They don't just wake up and make this stuff up, in my experience. But if they did, for whatever reason, then that child still needs help. So as parents, in my opinion, again, I think we have to step up to the plate and help the children understand what is actually going on for them and get the support and help that they need, no matter what the situation. And children do not have a voice. Adults do. And adults can be the master manipulator, as we've already said.
Thanks, Chris. So one of the things you said when you wrote to us is that you have three messages that I hope to convey to audience members. Now, we have covered the first one, but I am going to read out what you did say in this sentence. My first message is predators groom their character witnesses just as much as they do their victims. We discount victim stories because of positive experiences that we as a society have with whoever is accused. It is an incredibly naive take. And I just wanted to say that because I think we need to underline this bold, throw it out there, consistently put that out there in capitals. It's an incredibly naive take. And I see this time and time again in my own world. Your second point, you cannot parent a child who's experienced trauma the same way you parent a neurotypical child. Trauma changes your brain, especially complex and or long-term repetitive trauma. We have to, as parents and as society, learn that we can't just say, suck it up or push through. And I think that's something that I want to touch on now before we go to our next break. A very important message, and I'd like Denny to join in there, because I see this all the time with people, with survivors, adults, as well as children. Suck it up, put your big pants on, get over it. And it's just not that easy for a child, not an adult, and into life. That's never a good conversation to have. And it's part of society that really, I think, needs to really change.
Of course. And what we know, don't we, that when there's abuse going on, for children, our chemicals in our body are on hyper alert, our sympathetic nervous system is activated, and we are running from the lion constantly. And that absolutely changes our brain's function, our brain's ability to develop in the chronological maturation that we expect it to. And what that means is that we have many, many young people. And again, I go back to my experiences, I think, in my work in schools, that if they're being forced to hold eye contact, because that's what's expected of them at school, their muscle memory, their trauma memory, what that evokes physiologically for them could be that that is what their perpetrator did to them. Hold that eye stare, you know, as some kind of threat, or even if it was during an act. We know that hypervigilant children are really easily triggered. And what we as adults think are inconsequential may be the trigger that takes their body, not just their mind, their body back into the place of being traumatized. So when a teacher puts a hand on a shoulder of somebody to try and regain some control, that could activate a response as a result of part of their abuse was that they were pulled by a shoulder. We've had this in shows before around medical treatment. So I think it's really an area that needs to be spoken far more about, particularly in institutions where our children are being handed over to be kept safe, to be understood. We have to acknowledge that we are still in that system where one size is expected to fit all. And that is part of my role in raising awareness within schools.
Yeah, thanks, Denny. But, you know, particularly, I think we need to continue. I have a friend who, as an adult, was severely depressed.
Suicidal. And he decided to share this with his friends. And
he does speak publicly. I'm not going to mention his name just in case he doesn't want it publicly shared today. But he went to the pub and he said to his mates, I really could do with a chat. So they all went down there and he told them he was suicidal. And he said they slapped him on the back, said, come on, put your big pants on, let's get a few pints down you. And it, of course, you know, didn't help him in any way, shape or form. But he felt, and he has spoken publicly on big stages about it, that that was the society's way of coping with something they didn't know how to cope with. And again, something that we're seeing all the time here with this conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what you've just hit on the head there, EJ, is that that's about other people's intolerance to sit with difficult emotions and distress. So if we link it back to the parenting role, how incredibly hard that is when you're feeling all of those array of emotions that you feel as a parent, be it guilt, I didn't protect them, shock, I've been groomed, everything that goes on. Part of, I think what you were saying, Nicole, and that I strongly believe in, is that the parent needs support as well to regulate themselves. Because if parents can't regulate themselves enough to sit in their children's pain and distress and co-regulate that, then that navigation of healing for everyone is going to be more difficult. So we have to acknowledge that healing needs to happen for the parent as well as for the child. And you know, society, we still see it, don't we? You know, we see it everywhere in social media. You hear it, like you say, down the pub. There is still, on the one hand, we're saying that mental health doesn't have the stigma attached to it as it used to, and we're getting so much better. I think I would argue, I'm not so sure I'm seeing that playing out in day-to-day life. We're saying the right thing on the right platform. Are we truly getting more comfortable with the healing process? Because as you said, Nicole, there's still a little bit of, it's 2 years, you should be over this by now. How come you're still behaving in this way? And I'd like to ask the question, what are we measuring that against? What's the measure for this right way of healing? So I think there's a lot of pressure out there for people who have got the courage to actually stand up and say, this is how I'm feeling, because we have to acknowledge the response they get back is not always appropriate.
Before you realised that your children had been trafficked and had gone through trauma and the violation that they had, had you as a parent heard about trafficking and child sexual abuse and rape before in the way that you were now as a parent of children who'd gone through it? Or were you of that mindset that it would never happen to you and therefore you didn't really need to know any more about it?
So my understanding of it as I was, you know, before it happened to my own children is that, this is something that essentially children would be like kidnapped for, or that you had to watch out for it because they would be kidnapped, or, you know, more focused on, you know, just their teachers or their coaches or the church people, like things of that nature. And so I knew that it happened. And I have to tell you, there were so many times when my children were growing up that I had the thought in my head of, thank God that my kids don't have that happening to them. Thank God my kids didn't have that happening to them, until I found out that that was absolutely what was happening to them. And I feel like, you know, one of the things that we tend to, as a society, I think, try to push it off on others. You know, those are things that happen to others. And I think that, unfortunately, another naive thing that we do is that, you know, children are, you know, trafficking can only happen when children are kidnapped and taken somewhere else. And that the kidnapping part becomes the part that we worry about and not the trafficking part. And the problem is that we should know by now that trafficking happens all over with many different people in many different situations. And that is, there's not a kidnapping or an event that happens beforehand like that, that that's not what it is. And we have to be more aware of what it is, who does it, why, and how can we prevent it from happening realistically and not in this like utopian dream society.
So Nicole, in the UK in particular, and I'm sure it is the same in every country, most abuse, child sexual abuse, happens within the family home. That's just a known thing. We all know that anyone can be a perpetrator and anyone can be a victim. Yeah. I just don't think that society in general has that information or wants to know that information at their fingertips. So they're almost in denial. It's the othering. It's not going to happen to me. It's over there. Whereas the truth of the matter is what I've just said. And I also wanted to just touch upon the knock. So when you are within a family, you're the mother and your partner, husband, may be doing child sexual abuse material like your ex did and got arrested for and convicted of, the person, the mother, doesn't know any of this. And it's almost like a bomb's gone off in their world. They don't know what's happened. Their partner that they love and trust, they no longer look at them in the same way. And then the children, obviously, as well. Even if your children have not been abused, yours were, but if you were in a family where it wasn't and the husband was still doing child sexual abuse imagery, the knock is actually now recognizing that the family left behind from alleged perpetrators that are doing child sexual abuse imagery, there is a massive trauma impact on the family that's left behind. And we're actually doing something about that situation now in the UK. So, yeah, lots to talk about.
Thank you, Chris. I'm going to take a short break there, but don't go anywhere. We will be back after this short break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to today's show, The Continued Silence. If you've just joined us, we are nearly at the end of the show, but you can catch up by going to UK Health Radio. Sorry, it's ukhealthradio.com. Everything that we do there is on demand now, so you've got no excuse to miss anything. Nicole, obviously this is a very difficult conversation. I know you speak about it and you've got your podcast Through the Undertow, and I'm sure that helps you immensely as a parent to be able to have these conversations, to know that you're not alone, to know that you're helping people, you know, all the reasons we're here doing these shows as well, and the importance of them. So what I want you to sort of share with us really before you go off air is one of the things we touched on off air is the difficulty of the authorities and the legal system for your children disclosing. And, you know, a lot of people do have a lot of conversations and judgment towards children and adults who've been sexually abused as children. Why don't you just go to the police? Why don't you just disclose? Why didn't you tell somebody? Why? Well, it's not until you've gone through it yourself, or you, in your instance, as a parent, have witnessed your children go through it, you will see the reality of that. It's not quite simple, as everyone seems to think it is, of picking up the phone and dialing 999 or 111 to report an incident of child sexual abuse. It's very complicated. And if we go back to the grooming part of this, which we touched on at the beginning of the show, you know, when you've been groomed and you've been groomed by someone you know, someone you probably loved, there's a lot of guilt attached to that as well. So just, you know, just before we go off air today, I really would like sort of your thoughts as a parent, and I'm sure Jenny and Chris will add value to this conversation as well, of the legal system and disclosure.
Yeah, thank you. So the thing that I can say is that when it comes to disclosure, that's not actually the part that becomes difficult. It is depending on the age of the child. I think depending on the age of the child at disclosure, you can have a great amount of difficulty. How can you get across to a child who might not even know the words? How can they possibly convey to somebody what happened to them? But equally important comes back to that belief. And as a society, we tend to so much believe the perpetrators rather than the victims, and really come at them hard and question them hard. And I will say that when they're in the interview, in a forensic interview, the interviewer, it can, depending on their training and what they've gone through, they can be incredibly difficult for children to talk to. And I know that when my children disclosed to me, we then went through the interview process, and it had been so much time had gone past. There was, that was really all that was required of them at the time. And the thing was that they had support from so many different people, even within the system itself, of yes, we believe you, we think you're telling the truth. But even that becomes, that's a different level than whether or not someone's actually going to prosecute them, you know, and that is based more on whether or not they can expect a conviction. And so it's not, so there, our belief system as a society hinders the ability for these people to be held accountable, because the fact that we push so hard for somehow the victim to have these magical words that is going to show us that they're actually telling the truth, versus a person who is has essentially planned for this and has done everything they can to build up support around them to show that they didn't do it. You know, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be the difficult part, is that we as a society have to start changing it, changing the whole entire talk and dynamic around to that children need to be believed. And then, you know, you go from a place of believing, and then you try and figure out how can we show that what they're saying is the truth, but automatically believe that they're telling the truth, instead of a, how do we know that they're telling the truth? That there's just enough of a difference there to make it really, really important to the conversation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Denny, I'd like your sort of take on this as well, because you've worked in this area as well yourself, and you know, and the importance of taking children into, well, not directly worked in this, but you know, you've worked with children who have disclosed, and how important it is we protect them.
Yeah, and I agree, Nicole. I mean, disclosure is hard enough. It's incredibly hard. It's hard for the reason that we've already spoken about, that often young people don't know that the behaviour that's happening to them is wrong. They don't know how to define that. But also for me, what I've experienced is far too many times is that even when a young person is explained what the next process is going to be, which is really crucial, you know, I cannot hold on to this information, I'm going to have to pass this on, of which any young person that I work with is told that straight away. So there's the first barrier, because we're almost going, oh, be careful, you know, if you tell me this, I'm going to have to forward it. And what I have experienced far too many times, and without going into really that criticizing other professionals, but it's my truth, is that even with the courage to then go and speak to the relevant services, those children are returned within 2 or 3 days' time back to the very situation, because at some point they have retracted. And that retraction of their truth is seen as, therefore it didn't happen, rather than let's believe that it happened and stay with this. Protection has to come first. So, and I also, I know it's another layer, but I also think that we have to go way, 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 way up and go, who holds the positions of power in all of our justice systems, and who is at the top of the chain, and how come we are still going into victims' lives at such a deep level that makes them feel that they're almost having to prove that they are this saintly figure and therefore didn't ask for any of this abuse. It's systemic, isn't it?
It really is. And Denny, we are coming to the end of the show. Thank you. And I'm going to stay with you now as we start summarising today's show. And before we start going back to links and updates on Nicole and Chris. So, Denny, today's show, massive show, difficult show. Again, I think it's a show we should continue to do, because I think it's an important one for the parents of survivors of child sex abuse. So thank you, Nicole, for opening that with us today. Denny?
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost struggling for the first time to pull it together, because it has been such a big conversation. But I think if we stick to the parenting side of it, we have to offer kindness to parents who have just had their world blown apart. Yes, the message to believe, I think we're all in agreement with that. Chris, you are absolutely right. We have to believe anything that a child tells us. But we also then have to stop, in the systems that we belong in, making that go-to judgment. They must have known who didn't protect who. We have to support everybody who's involved in this hand grenade that has just exploded. I'm going to also take it one step further, that yes, we know that disclosure is very difficult for young children, which is why I advocate, can we allow our children to play more? Let them play, because through play, they do not tell us what's going on in their lives. And it's down to us to kind of pick up in schools and education, you know, the play that is going on, and just be curious. I think the main message for me, obviously, as a therapist, is that both parent and children need therapeutic support at the right time. You know, parents need to be given the tools and the support to speak their truth without feeling shame or judgment, which then will enable some regulation to go on to be able to hold the space to hear some really distressing information about their children and what they've gone through. So I think you can't deal with it in a singular way. It's a parallel track as far as I'm concerned. And the last thing I want to say, and it's far more on a global thing, I think what's really interesting for me is if we turn a blind eye to the atrocities around the world in terms of violence and sexual violence towards girls and women, then we are absolutely feeding into the naivety that some people have around, Nicole, you said it, what trafficking is. We know that the sexual violence and violence towards girls and women in places like Afghanistan are so often seen as it's happening over there, therefore it's not our problem. I've just been blessed to be on a conference with 1,500 women who tackle this in the countries that are war-torn. And I think for me, I came away really believing that the misogynistic approach to violence towards girls and women has to be recognised no matter where we are in the world.
Thank you, Danny. Really important feedback, as always, and recognising the conversation globally, again, is always important. And thank you for your valuable feedback. Nicole. Thank you for joining us today. We are seconds away from the end. One word from you, Nicole, today that you can resonate with.
I think the word that I would pick today would be support. I think parents supporting children and society supporting parents and society supporting the family. I think support is an incredible word, yeah.
So, Nicole, you can find Nicole's work if you go to www.throughtheundertow.com. Through is THRU, and that's Nicole Lau. Chris, one word from you, please.
Oh, it's a phrase, thought-provoking.
Oh, thought-provoking. Okay. Always a delight to have Chris with us, opening its conversations on very difficult subjects. You can find Chris on Twitter. She is Chris Tuck underscore WWHF. If you go there, you'll find everything that she represents, she stands for, lots of links to her charity as well. Thank you, Chris, for being here today. And Denny, one word from you.
I can't do it in one word. I'm so sorry.
Oh, but, you've done it all in lots of words, though. So
For me, it's lean in, compassion, kindness, believe.
Thank you, Denny. Denny is at www.dennycorbycounselling.co and Denny is DENI. I want to thank everybody who works very hard with us behind the scenes to have these shows produced, especially Johan and Christine and everyone at UK Health Radio. Thank you very much to you all for helping us, and I hope that this has given some insight to someone today and help them in their life. So thank you, Nicole. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Denny. I will see you all next time.